This is the Disability Visibility Podcast with your host, Alice Wong.
Hey there, friend. Welcome to the Disability Visibility Podcast. Conversations on disability politics, culture, and media. I'm your host, Alice Wong. Today's episode is all about food accessibility and ableism with Jonah Louise. What is your first reaction? What do you think of prepackaged, peeled, and cut fruit? Do you think it's a frivolous waste? Do you think it's for lazy people? I've learned a lot from activist Kim Souter about food accessibility from a blog, Cripple Scholar. And earlier this year, Jonah Louise, a writer from the UK, came out with a piece in response to criticisms of these products from a perspective as a disabled person. We also talked about the proposed ban of plastic straws in the UK that are also happening around the world. Are you ready? Oh, here we go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
So, Jonah, thank you so much for being on the Disability Visibility Podcast. Why don't you introduce yourself and just share a little bit about yourself?
I'm Jonah Cobb, and I have a blog, and I talk about anything to do with disability, really, stuff about ableism, accessibility. I do a little bit of that kind of thing in the media in the UK as well, and generally just try and educate people and raise awareness of some of the issues that affect disabled people.
Tell me a little bit about how you got started in writing and journalism, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so I started my blog coming up about 7 years ago now. I started it when I was 14 and I was in high school and feeling quite isolated and like I didn't quite fit in. And when I started my blog, I had the genetic condition I have now, but it didn't really affect me. It was sort of mild symptoms like pain and joint hypermobility. And then I started my blog and I started talking about beauty because that was the community that I came across first. And then over the course of sort of 2 or 3 years, as my health got worse and I found myself having surgeries and I ended up having to leave school at about 16, my blog ended up being sort of the thing that saved me, really, and kept those social connections up and gave me something to do in my free time. And then ever since then, it's just sort of evolved now, and the main thing I talk about is disability.
And what was that transition like from, you know, writing more and more and, you know, talking more about disability? Because, you know, there are a lot of writers and journalists with disabilities that don't really want to talk about that or want to cover that. So, you know, what was that transition like for you?
So it started off quite naturally for me when I had my first operation, and I was searching online for information about people's experiences, and I really wasn't finding the answers to the questions that I had, sort of the really sort of personal questions and things that people don't really talk about when it comes to the surgery I was having. So I thought, well, why don't I just document my experience and, you know, be completely open so that people like me in the future can read this and have those answers that I was looking for myself. And it just started off like that, really, that I was just talking about these just sort of surgeries at first, just sort of like my milestones. You know, I wasn't as such talking about disability because it took me many years to, you know, even consider myself disabled, you know, fighting off that internalized ableism. And at first, when I started going from just talking about experiences to actually tackling bigger subjects to do with disability, a lot of my readers were quite sort of disinterested because they were mostly non-disabled and, you know, came to talk to read about beauty and talk about that kind of thing. So at first I did find that I was losing a lot of readers, views were going down, and it was quite disheartening at first. And then when I came across the community of disabled people and saw that, you know, I wasn't the only one talking about these things, and in fact I could probably build up that readership again with new people who were interested in what I had to say, I just sort of continued, and eventually I sort of found a happy medium where I still have a lot of non-disabled readers, but I also have this new community of disabled people who can relate with me.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, disabled writers are, however they identify, write about, you know, whatever they're passionate about. But I think, you know, as you probably also might feel, you know, disabled people really need to see disabled writers and disabled people creating media to be part of the media, be journalists and, you know, people on the telly, people on radio, because there really isn't that representation that's out there. Do you feel that way at all?
Yeah, that was a problem I had at the start. I couldn't see anyone else talking about what I was talking about, because the community that I was within at first, you know, I really was one of the only few disabled people within that community. So at first, I really felt like an outsider. And then when you come across this whole community of people doing their thing, you know, creating media, sharing their stories, you know, just doing what they feel, you know, they're passionate about, you know, it really sort of sparks something inside you. And then further on in the past few years, when I've seen, you know, disabled journalists and more disabled people on TV, you know, things like that, it really just motivates me more and makes me think, yeah, actually that could be attainable.
Yeah, I feel the same way too. I think the more folks I discover and, you know, come across, it just really invigorates me. It makes me feel like, oh my goodness, like, our community is so vast. That's really just the tip of the iceberg. And we have so much, you know, interesting perspectives that I really feel like mainstream media doesn't really know about. One of my friends tweeted one of your articles recently about prepackaged foods. And, you know, you wrote an article earlier this year about the criticisms that, you know, people have had on social media about prepackaged foods. And you wrote an opinion piece about how that really is ableist and it leaves out, you know, a lot of people who need these things. So what prompted you to write about this?
Yeah, so it's an issue that I think last year really kept coming up again and again. And I think the first thing I saw was about the pre-peeled orange in a little plastic pot, which I think was over in the US, that kept popping up, and, you know, people kept making new tweets and it kept getting shared, and this sort of anger inside me just kept building and building. So when the issue sort of came up more in the UK with this, I think it was called a cauliflower steak, which was just sort of a sliced piece of cauliflower, and I just thought, you know, I've had enough, I need to write something about this. And I really thought that no one would be interested. So when people actually started listening to what I had to say, I was quite shocked, really, because, you know, I see disabled people, you know, friends, again and again, bringing up these issues, but not getting anywhere. We have, you know, these call-out tweets that mainly non-disabled people do about these foods. Disabled people respond, sort of, you know, put in their opinion, and then it just sort of gets pushed down again, and then a few months later it might happen again. So I felt like I wanted to do something to at least try and break that cycle and introduce this side of the sort of the topic to my readers, especially my non-disabled readers, who, you know, really had no idea and had joined in this sort of calling out sort of thread of tweets and things like that. And yeah, it was just one of these things that sometimes these topics just really get to you, and it sort of latches onto something personal inside you, because I really do rely on prepackaged food a lot, especially for lunches. So it really did just sort of spark something inside me that I thought, you know, I've had enough, I really need to start discussing this.
That's wonderful. And I think you were even on 204, the video section about it. So what was that like? Because that's also really exciting too, to see that, you know, it gets picked up and you start being kind of like, you know, a go-to person to talk about this. What was that like?
Yeah, when I first got the message, I was shocked, and not in the sense that, you know, it was TV. It was more that shocked that, you know, such a big media platform was interested in a disability story like this. And I was really shy as a child, so I've sort of over these years sort of builded up sort of my media stuff and sort of slowly done more things that terrify me. And that was one of those things that really did terrify me. But I thought I can't turn down this opportunity to get this issue out there to mainly non-disabled people who have no idea that this is a problem. So yeah, it was amazing to get that sort of email and to be asked, and also terrifying.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people just don't realize all the privilege that's, you know, behind all the criticisms, you know, whether it's cooking or eating nutritious meals or just, you know, preparing meals, because, you know, people with disabilities, they may need, you know, devices or, you know, equipment. They might need an accessible kitchen. They may need time and energy. And we may be poorer than others, or live in a place that doesn't have easy access to food.
Yeah, so that was a big thing. And I think it's one of these issues where, you know, people literally just don't realize. It's not that people are, you know, intentionally, I mean, sometimes people are intentionally saying, you know, you don't deserve access to these foods, get someone else to do it, you know, etc. But most of the time, people just really have no idea about these kinds of problems and no idea about the privilege they hold. And, you know, sometimes it's great when people, you know, put their hand up and say, okay, yeah, I accept that. I had no idea. From now on, I will think differently. You know, I will look at this issue differently. But it's when people, you know, get annoyed when they're, you know, being called out for their privilege and the way they're using their privilege. And, you know, that's what I find quite frustrating, that, you know, people have taken this idea of privilege and think, you know, it's like an offensive thing to say that someone has privilege now. And I find that really frustrating, because it's just sort of recognizing your privilege. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we all, most people have some kind of privilege, and it's not the end of the world to recognize that, and, you know, to go one step further and try and use that to raise other people's voices.
Absolutely. And how do you currently kind of access food for yourself, if you don't mind kind of describing your day-to-day activities regarding food preparation and just, you know, feeding yourself?
So currently I'm living with family, so sort of for evening meals I'm covered and my family will make them, but for lunches and things like that I heavily rely on things like pre-made salads, sort of like packaged sandwiches, and, you know, especially fruit is a big thing that I really heavily rely on, pre-cut fruit, and, you know, even, you know, stuff like when I saw the peeled orange, I thought, you know, I wish we had that over in the UK, because that would really help me out. So for, you know, sort of breakfast and lunch, I'm heavily relying on prepackaged foods, and then for evening meals I'm covered. But I'm hoping to move out on my own eventually, this time sort of around this year. So when that happens, you know, I will have to try and figure out even more ways to stay independent, and, you know, how to access foods, because, you know, social care is being cut so much in this country, you know, and everywhere really. It's a big issue, and so ideally, whilst I would love and need that sort of support from another person to access food, and especially good and healthy food, you know, that I will enjoy, you know, I'm not 100% sure if I will be eligible for that help.
Yeah, you know, I live with family as well, and, you know, they do the majority of the cooking, but, like, you know, I also want to do things that, you know, are convenient for me as well. And I think, you know, sometimes I get things that are taken out or delivered to my home, because, you know, I want to kind of, I guess, as somebody who relies on other people for assistance for a lot of things. You know, anyway, I just try to make it a little bit easier for all of us. It's always, you know, a nice option to have, and I think, you know, we all need those kind of choices.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's one thing that I kept repeating to people. People would say to me, you know, well, just get your family to do all of it, or get them to make you something before they go to work and things like that. And, you know, we have the right to have as many choices as possible, really. And whilst it might be easier to get someone else to do it, you know, a lot of us want to retain that independence. And if this food can give us that option, then we should have it. You know, it's just it's a right.
Yeah, and I think some people don't realize, again, another aspect of that experience is when you ask people for help, it's like, you know, there's kind of a limit. So, like, you know, any way to try to, like, you know, decrease the number of times you need to ask the same person to do something, it's always kind of like a really good thing. It's like, so if I donate to somebody to cut my apple slices for me, you know, that's one less task for them. But that's better for all of us in a lot of ways. Speaking of privilege, I think, you know, there's this other, you know, flip side. You know, there's a lot of food shaming, you know, particularly of poor people, you know, poor disabled people. I think, you know, I'm following a lot of the things that are happening in the UK, and I know, you know, about the term scroungers, and, you know, there's just a lot of, you know, victim blaming. You know, accusations of people with disabilities as lazy, as trying to cheat the system. Do you think those kinds of conditions also kind of, you know, feeds this environment in terms of this kind of critique toward, you know, these prepackaged foods?
Oh, absolutely. There's just this kind of assumption, and like words like lazy and scrounger just sort of automatically get connected to disability, and it's really fed by the media in this country, the government, and you know, it's almost this idea of you're guilty until proven innocent, especially when it comes to things like the benefit system in this country. You know, especially we've got this huge issue right now, people being assumed to be lazy and cheats and all of these negative words that people have just sort of learned to connect to disability, really. And that definitely does feed into more of these problems like food and access to food, and especially when it comes to people's idea of, like, if you don't have much money, people have this idea of, well, if you don't have much money, then you should be using it in this way or this way. And I think I read a piece recently that talked about how, you know, if you don't have much money, if you're poor, then you shouldn't be getting things like McDonald's, like the saver items at McDonald's, because, you know, you should be, it's cheaper to make food from scratch. And it's like, well, actually, at that time, when you've only got, say, £5, you don't have the money to buy, you know, all of the ingredients you need for enough meals for a week. You've only got enough money for that day to feed you for that day. And, you know, that's a big problem that we have. And you know, people dictating what they feel others should spend their money on, especially if you're on benefits.
Yeah, for people who are kind of, you know, unfamiliar with the politics going on in the UK, would you say that a lot of these attitudes and cuts, you know, the benefits and social programs, is this basically because of the Tory party? How would you kind of describe this, you know, trend towards, you know, this really crushing oppression for disabled people in the UK?
Yeah, absolutely. And, it, you know, it's coming from the party that's in power currently and has been in power for the last sort of many years, really, the Conservative Party, also known as the Tories. And, you know, the benefit system is really constantly being changed and cut again and again. And then when you mix that with social care being cut and the National Health Service being cut, you know, you get this sort of system where disabled people especially are being hit from so many different sides. And, you know, it is our current government that is pushing out this idea that, you know, disabled people are cheats, they're lazy, you know, there's a number you can ring if you think that a disabled person is lying to get benefits, and that's misused a lot, you know, especially people with variable conditions where they're able to walk one day or need a wheelchair the next day. You know, there's a lot of fear about being reported for, you know, simply living your life. And, you know, it's a big fear. And, you know, especially you, when you're on several of the benefits, there's the employment support allowance benefit, which is for people who can't work due to sickness or disability. And there's two different groups for that. And if you're in the lower group where the Department for Work and Pensions decide that you might be able to work in the future, that payment has been cut again and again the past few years. You know, I think it was recently £30 less a week, which is a lot of money to lose.
Talk about another gender-related topic. And that's been a lot about this recent, you know, campaign by a lot of, you know, restaurant groups or other industries against the use of straws. And I was wondering if what you thought about that, because I think it's really, you know, related in terms of this, like, you know, kind of environmental, you know, idea to really, you know, stop waste. And, you know, plastic straws are something that a lot of people with disabilities use every day because they need to. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, so in the UK at the moment, there's this sort of running campaign that in sort of recent months, a lot of people sort of jumped on the bandwagon almost, and it's sort of built up momentum quite quickly. And we've got a lot of restaurants and cafes that are pulling plastic straws really quickly without putting in place any safe alternatives. And, you know, we're seeing the effects of that already. And there's just this growing campaign really that has completely forgotten disabled people, because it's been pushed forward so quickly that there's not even been time for us to put in our opinions or our voices. And it's only now, once these restaurants and these cafes have made these decisions, that, you know, disabled people's voices are starting to be lifted up and actually listened to. Because whilst there are alternatives to plastic straws, you know, some of them aren't great. You know, things like metal straws can be quite dangerous. And, you know, plastic straws, whilst, yes, they do contribute to some environmental problems, you know, are some of the best straws for people to use, especially disabled people. You know, I've tried a different amount of alternatives, but for me, plastic straws are still the best for me currently. And whilst I want to do everything that I can to you know, do good for the environment, I have to think about my independence and, you know, my rights and other people's rights to do the same things as everyone else.
Exactly. And, you know, I use, you know, plastic straws when I'm out, but I use glass straws when I'm at home. But, you know, I can't carry around, you know, glass straws around with me, you know, all the time. So, you know, once in a while, it's a trade-off. And I think, you know, this is where I think, like you said, you know, people with disabilities are left out of these conversations or even the ideas of, you know, creating these campaigns. What are some of the ways that you would suggest that, you know, environmentalists can really engage with disabled people and really build kind of solidarity? Just, you know, I think we all want to reduce waste, but there must be ways we can do that without isolating or blaming or shaming, you know, disabled people.
Yeah, so throughout this whole time, I've done a few interviews about the plastic straws thing and the packaged food thing, and really the message I've just been putting out there is we just need to be included in the conversation, you know, especially like campaign groups need to be bringing in disabled people to put in their opinion, and so they know about these issues before they rush through with their campaigns and, you know, removing straws and removing prepackaged food and things like that. I'm currently working with an environmental group in the UK, and I'm just simply writing a sort of a document that just runs through ableism, really, just the basics of that, and then also how ableism runs through a lot of these environmentalist groups, just so they're educated, and so before they, you know, put out their opinion and their plans, they're running through it and checking, actually, does this affect disabled people, and in what way, and what do we do about it if it does?
Well, do you have any other, anything you want to share in terms of your thinking and writing and experiences with food and accessibility?
I don't think so. I think we've covered everything really there. It's quite a complex subject, but we managed to sort of condense it down.
Great. Well, Fiona, thank you so much for being on my podcast today. It was quite a delight to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
This podcast is a production of the Disability Visibility Project. And all my community dedicated to creating, sharing, and amplifying the disability media and culture. All episodes, including the transcripts, are available at disabilityvisibilityproject.com/podcast. You can also find out more about Shona on our website. The audio producer for this episode is Geraldine Asu. Introduction by Latif McFloud. Theme music by Wilshire Sports Camp. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can also support our podcast to $1 a month or more by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/DVP. That's patreon.com/DVP. Well, it's been real. Thank you for listening. And see you on the internet. Bye! Rock into the blast off, stop, drop, dance off.